I'd like also to welcome all of you out on the web. We've developed a following on the web, people that are not able to get out of their homes, so we appreciate the fact that we can offer this service and that they can be with us in that way as well. Got a couple of housekeeping items that I'd like to go over before we get into the Bible study. First of all, we were blessed with another grandson this week, so we are happy is not somehow not adequate. We're very excited and happy that both of our grandsons have arrived safely. Everybody's doing well. And as a consequence, we will be leaving after the Bible study. I wasn't on the schedule to speak this afternoon anyway because Caleb's being released from the hospital and Dad and Mom are tired. So we're going to go there and help get them situated this afternoon and this evening in their home. But thanks to all of you. I know many of you were praying for the arrival of everybody, and I'm happy to report everything went well, and everybody's healthy and hungry, I'm told, on a very frequent basis. So that's good. Okay, we have, and I'll have this announced this afternoon as well, but I wanted to mention it, and then you can maybe pass the word around. It's time for the annual congregational survey, and this is the survey from the congregation giving me input. It can be anonymous, but my preference is that you put your name on it so that if I have questions, I can follow up with the person. And it just makes it more effective. So if you could, let's try to have these filled out and return next week or today. And let's see. I need to assign someone to who's the lucky. Bring him back to Steve Richmond. How's that? He brought him here. Steve, would you be able to gather these up when they're filled out? So after you've got them completed, get them back to Steve, and Steve can also pass them out. They're up here with the up here in the front in the second row. Same thing we did a year ago. There's also a section right at the end, excluding the ministry. Please list the names of those that are serving you well. That's also helpful input for me. We have a happy announcement here. Peter Ekema got his job and accepted it. So the Ekema family is very happy about that. I am too. He helped us with our addition this last year in doing some design work for him, and I think he'll make a fine architect. Pam Bickle requests your prayers. She has acute sixth nerve palsy, causes double vision, disorientation, can't drive or work. So you can talk to Todd and get some more information on that. Okay, we're going to do our last Bible study with respect to the United States and Britain and prophecy. And in one sense, this is not a happy Bible study, because we're going to look at some doom and gloom on the road ahead, but the title is From Punishment to Destiny. You know, we looked at tracing the tribes down through time and how the promises of Abraham were passed from generation to generation, and the fact that God is faithful in fulfilling the promises that he made, even if it's millennia ago. So over to begin with the Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 7. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 7. We'll be looking at Jeremiah and Ezekiel a number of times, as well as some books of the Old Testament. as we go through this. In verse 7, chapter 30 of Jeremiah, verse 7. Chapter 30 of Jeremiah, verse 7. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. So we see here that Jeremiah prophesied a day of trouble in which Jacob would be punished. But notice the hopeful thing is that he will be saved out of it. So that kind of sets the stage to what we're going to discuss this morning. On the one hand, there is the biblical concept of justice on a national level. But there's also the hopeful promise that he will be saved out of it. Throughout the long history of the lost 10 tribes, God has always known who and where they were, even if they forgot it as was prophesied. He promised to their ancient forefathers, and he has given the modern descendants of Joseph, primarily Britain and the United States, the family birthright and many of Earth's choicest blessings. These nations have received a singular opportunity to provide leadership in the world at large, but what does the Bible say about their future? The answer is sobering. The answer is sobering because we have been blessed in this nation beyond any other nation in the history of the world. If you look at the wealth that we have enjoyed, the freedoms we have enjoyed, and I'll digress for a moment. I had a discussion this week with an individual, actually a banker, and you know we were talking about the fact that moral bankruptcy precedes economic bankruptcy. And he asked me of my opinion on why it is that Europe, in many ways, is much more liberal than even the United States. And Germany, of course, seems to be doing quite well economically. Why is that? And my answer was, I said, you know, if you look at the writings of even the founders, and I forget who said this, I forget if it was Adams or Washington or Jefferson, it would have been, and if I keep expanding the list of founders, it must have been one of them. But in any case, what was stated is that the form of government that we are establishing can only work with a populace that has a basic moral foundation. We will go to, I mean, the impact of the loss of morality in the United States is going to be felt quicker because of the freedoms that are available. So because we're free to basically do whatever we please, whenever we please, the consequences are going to come through quicker as well. And I'm talking in particular with regard to economic consequences, because a free society can only function if it's moral, without the economic, absent the government regulations that you have in, for example, the social democracies of Western Europe, where everything is regulated. Stated another way, in the United States, everything that is not expressly forbidden is allowed. And we used to joke in Germany that everything that's not expressly allowed is forbidden. And, you know, it's kind of a tongue-in-cheek way of stating it, but it's true. In the United States, you can pretty much claim to be anything, obviously doctors and a few professions are regulated, but if you're a roofer, if I want to go into the roofing business, you know, I can probably get into the business for less than $100. You know, you print up some business cards and you hang, tape a sign on the side of your truck and put a ladder on it, and you go out, and if somebody's willing to give you a contract, and let you fail, I mean, you're free to do that. In Germany, you can't even think about doing that. You cannot be a roofer without having served a four-year apprenticeship and then have had a certain number of years of experience so that you can become a quote-unquote licensed roofer. So I'm citing that as an example on how quickly things can collapse absent basic moral principles. If we have basic moral principles, I'm not going to tell you that I can put a roof on your house when I have no idea how to do it. But we have the freedoms here to allow that to happen. Many Bible prophecies portray a repentant Israel at the return of Jesus Christ. Its descendants will turn to God and begin obeying his laws, but only after they have gone through crises worse in many ways than the catastrophes that befell ancient kingdoms of Israel and Judah. Let's go over to Isaiah chapter 11. Isaiah chapter 11 is a passage of scripture that we often cite during the Feast of Tabernacles because Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 6 famously talks about the wolf and the lion wolf and the lamb dwelling together. But notice in verse 11 of the same passage, it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand again the second time to recover the remnant of his people who are left from Assyria and Egypt, from Pathros and Cush, from Elam and Shinar, from Hamath and the islands of the sea. And then in verse 12, he continues about setting up a banner. I'd like to focus in on verse 15. The Lord will utterly destroy the tongue of the sea of Egypt. With his mighty wind, he will shake his fist over the river and strike it into seven streams and make men cross over it dry shod. So here you have a repeat of, and we'll look at a few other scriptures, you have a repeat of what occurred many years ago when Israel was brought into the land, Israel once again being brought into the land. There will be a highway for the remnant of his people who will be left from Assyria as it was for Israel in the day that he came up from the land of Egypt. Ezekiel chapter, and let's look at Jeremiah chapter 23 first here for a moment. And remember Jeremiah. Jeremiah wrote and lived during the time immediately preceding Judah's captivity, which came some 100 years later after Israel had already gone into captivity and, in fact, disappeared because the Babylonians had taken over Assyria. So Jeremiah was not prophesying, as it were, to ancient Israel, because he lived much later. Jeremiah chapter 23, in verse 3, "But I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I have driven them, and bring them back to their folds, and they shall be fruitful and increase." Notice, he will bring back a remnant. Depending on how you do the calculations, it appears that at the return of Jesus Christ, only about 10% of the earth population as it exists today will still be alive. So when we go to a scripture in Matthew here in a minute, you know, that will make sense. I mean, between now and the return of Jesus Christ, and the establishment of the kingdom of God on this earth, we are going to see some very bad times. But, again, Jeremiah's prophesying that he's going to bring them out. Ezekiel chapter 6. Ezekiel chapter 6. In verse 8. Yet I will leave a remnant, so that you may have some who escape the sword among the nations when you are scattered through the countries. Then those of you who escape will remember me among the nations where they are carried captive, because I was crushed by their adulterous heart, which has departed from me, and by their eyes which play the harlot after their idols. They will loathe themselves for the evils that they have committed in all their abominations. It's only after intense destruction and captivity that the descendants of Israel will come to themselves. Now, this is Ezekiel writing. Ezekiel was writing long after ancient Israel, the northern tribes, had been dispersed. And, you know, if you see here in verse 2 of chapter 6, Son of man, set your face toward the mountains of Israel and prophesy against them. So this message is directed specifically to Israel. And again, I think a lot of people don't look at the context and the time frame in which this was done and assume incorrectly that what is being talked about here is the captivity that occurred anciently, was Israel going into captivity. That can't be the case because they had already been carried into captivity, so this is something that will occur yet future. Now let's go to the New Testament and notice Christ's own testimony with respect to what Jeremiah called the time of Jacob's trouble. Matthew chapter 24. Matthew chapter 24, verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation, such as has not been since the beginning of the world until this time, no, nor ever shall be. So, Jesus Christ himself said that the days immediately preceding his return would be a time that is worse than anything that has occurred prior to that time. Now, anybody that has looked at history, even done a cursory examination, will know that we've had some really bad times on this earth. Let's take a quick look at, you know, God's expectations of Israel over in Deuteronomy chapter 9. You know, and I think this will ring true with, you know, the notion of the United States being a city set on a hill. I think Reagan quoted that passage. We have been blessed beyond measure, and in many ways the United States has also been a blessing that has largely gone unappreciated, but the fact still remains, and again, I like to deal in facts. And I would challenge anybody to demonstrate with empirical evidence that there has ever been a country in the history of the world that has done more for other countries than the United States of America in its short history. And I don't think you'll be able to come up with it. I mean, you have got a lot of large empires. I mean, the Roman Empire, even at its zenith, wasn't anywhere near the size that the British Empire was. But the difference, the remarkable difference about the United States for all its faults, is that we have not done what most empires of the world did in the past, and that is you go and you conquer and you conquer and conquest, and you accumulate ever increasing goods, and you oppress the people. In the past century, the United States, at great expense and bloodshed, has liberated millions of people and then given the countries back to its citizens. That is an anomaly that I don't think you'll find anywhere else in history, at least not on that scale. The Gentile thinking is, look, we spend our money and our men to conquer, and now we own it. Deuteronomy chapter 9 and verse 5. It is not because of your righteousness or the uprightness of your heart that you go in to possess their land, but because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God drives them out from before you, and that he may fulfill the word which the Lord swore to your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were to be an example nation, a city on a hill. Let's look at Deuteronomy chapter 4. This is a couple pages back. Deuteronomy chapter 4. In verse 5 says, "There surely I have taught you the statutes and judgments, just as the Lord my God commanded me, that you should act according to them in the land which you go to possess. Therefore be careful to observe them, for this is your wisdom and your understanding in the sight of the people who will hear all these statutes and say, surely this great nation is a wise and understanding people. For what great nation is there, verse 7, that has God so near to it, as the Lord our God is to us, for whatever reason we may call upon him? And what great nation is there that has such statutes and righteous judgments as are in all this law which I have set before you this day? Only take heed to yourself and diligently keep yourself, lest you forget the things your eyes have seen, and lest they depart from your heart and all the days of your life, and teach them to your children and grandchildren, especially concerning the day you stood before the Lord your God in Horeb, when the Lord said to me, gather the people to me, and I will let them hear my words, that they may learn to fear me all the days they live on the earth, and that they may teach their children." This was the expectation that God had of Israel. And there's a clear parallel between the expectation that God had for Israel and the premise upon which the United States of America was founded. The Declaration of Independence is a remarkable document if you take time to read it, and it was also radical at that time because it was written in a time when it was still widely believed that, you know, kings rule by divine right. It was the divine right of kings. And kings actually believed that they could not make a, that God would not allow them to make a wrong decision, because they were ruling by divine right and God would guide them. So when Jefferson penned those words that are now famous in the Declaration of Independence, that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that we are endowed by our Creator with certain unalienable rights. The truth that was self-evident was that those rights came from a Creator, and that they were endowed to individuals, instead of through some monarch that was ruling by divine right. Consequently, our judicial system in this country was, and many of the laws were based on the civil code of the Old Testament. And we enjoyed those blessings for many years, but we're not teaching them to our children any longer in a systemic manner in the formal education process. In fact, we have departed so far from those founding principles that it is now illegal to teach that a creator exists, much less being endowed by unalienable rights. I mean, it's a contradiction that will have and has already had consequences. And we'll see that more as we go forward. Let's go to Deuteronomy chapter 28. Deuteronomy chapter 28 is one of the two blessings and cursings chapters. But it shall come to pass, if you do not obey the voice of the Lord your God, to observe carefully all his commandments and his statutes, which I command you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. And we'll just touch on a couple here and see if they somehow ring true. Cursed shall you be in the city, and cursed shall you be in the country. You know, this week we celebrated, if you can use that word, the 39th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And I didn't hear what the total count of aborted babies is in the 39 years. Someone know? Freeman? I thought it was 50 million. I didn't know the exact number. We have aborted our future. We have aborted the our social security. Think of what 50 million additional working citizens would do to the tax base. You know, when God said children are a blessing, he meant it. And, you know, having had two grandchildren in the last month, it is, to me, it's just incomprehensible, first of all, and why people don't like kids. I mean, I've never understood that. It makes no sense to me. And worse, why in the world you would ever abort a life. Susan was listening to the radio this week, and some commentator was on and said that in New York City, and it was a, lest someone think this is politically not correct and somehow racist, let me quote a black commentator. An African-American commentator was saying that in New York City, 6 out of 10 African-American pregnancies are terminated by abortion. And we look back to the ancient cultures of Canaan and the Israelites and shudder at the thought that they had the practice of child sacrifice. We have it today, and we will suffer the same consequences. Verse 20, the Lord will send on you cursing, confusion, and rebuke in all that you set your hands to do until you are destroyed, until you perish quickly, because the wickedness of your doings in which you have forsaken me. There is so much confusion in the business world today, it is unbelievable. A confusion of heart. The Lord will make the plague cling to you until he has consumed you from the land which you are going to possess. The Lord will strike you with consumption, with fever, with inflammation, with severe burning fever, with the sword, with scourging, with mildew. They shall pursue you and you shall perish. And your heavens shall be, and your heavens which are over your head shall be bronze, and the earth which are under you shall be iron. And that's certainly not the case here in Ohio yet. But, you know, we take rain in due season for granted. I mean, it just, the problem in Ohio is not that we don't have water, it is what to do with all the water. That is such a blessing. I mean, if we would not have rain for 3 months, the bronze and the iron would begin to make sense. The Lord will cause you to be defeated before your enemies, and you shall go out one way against them and flee seven ways before them, and you shall become troublesome to all the kingdoms of the earth. We still have the most powerful military on the face of the earth. We still have. But we're in the process of cutting it, while at the same time arrogantly proclaiming that we're indefeatable. And, you know, one of the central messages of the State of the Union address this past week was, America is back. And anyone that does not believe it doesn't know what he's talking about. It was a good speech. I've gotten in trouble this week a number of times. It was a good speech. Of course, 90% of it was not true. The problem is that we live in a country in which lies are believed. People would rather believe lies than to face the reality of where we have arrived at. Where we have arrived at is what we're reading right here. Continuing verse 26, your carcasses shall be food for all the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth, and no one shall frighten them away. The Lord will strike you with the boils of Egypt, with tumors, with the scab, and with the itch from which you cannot be healed. The Lord will strike you with madness and blindness and confusion of heart. You know, there's something. There's a certain steadiness of someone that believes in God. Even if that belief may be incomplete or somewhat misguided, there's still a steadiness there and a sense of responsibility that a classic unbeliever does not have. If you believe you're an accident that just happened, and that this life is all there is, it becomes a maddening race to get as much as possible, as fast as possible, no matter what the expense. It's no longer an issue of principle. You shall betroth a wife, but another man shall lie with her. Is that occurring? You shall build a house, but you shall not dwell in it. You shall plant a vineyard, but shall not gather its grapes. Now, I've done that a number of times because I move. Your ox shall be slaughtered before your eyes, but you shall not eat of it. Your donkey shall be violently taken away from you and shall not be restored to you. Your sheep shall be given to your enemies, and you shall have no one to rescue them. Your sons and your daughters shall be given to another people, and your eyes shall look and fall with longing for them all day long, and there shall be no strength in your hand. You know, when Jesus Christ said that the time, you know, you can look at these things and go into history and find when elements of them occurred. But the great tribulation will have all of this at the same time. A nation whom you have not known shall eat the fruit of your land and the produce of your labor, and you shall be only oppressed, crushed, and crushed continually. So you shall be driven mad because of the sight which your eyes see. The Lord will strike you in the knees and on the legs with severe boils that cannot be healed, and from the sole of your foot to the top of your head. The Lord will bring you and the king whom you set over you to a nation which neither you nor your fathers have known, and there you will serve other gods, wood and stone. King that you set over yourself. And you shall become an astonishment, a proverb, and a byword among the nations where the Lord will drive you. You shall carry much seed out to the field and gather but little in, for the locusts shall consume it. You shall plant vineyards and tend them, but you shall neither drink of the wine nor gather the grapes, for the worms shall eat them. And this just goes on and on and on. It is the natural consequence. What we're reading here is the natural consequence of life as it exists absent God's laws. You know, God, in a sense, doesn't even have to punish. We do it all by ourselves. You know, the United States was founded, as I mentioned earlier, through leaders who, for the most part, held great respect for the Bible. Although officially favoring no single religion. You see, that was the difference. All the founders were looking to do was to create an environment in which different Christian denominations would all be free to worship their God in accordance to conscience. The notion that somehow there was to be separation of church and state, and that the government would not be involved in religion at all, I mean, it's just that it's a notion. Credible historical evidence exists that the original intent was what it has now become. And you look at what has happened to our school systems and our government since 1960, and it's just unbelievable. And my dad is, let's see, he just turned 74. He grew up Amish, went to a public school, and you know he was reminiscing a couple years ago. I was sitting, we were talking, and he talked about the fact that every day began with the recitation of the Lord's Prayer and the reading from either Proverbs or Psalms in public school. One generation removed. Today that is unthinkable. Why have we allowed it to happen? When you think about it. We allowed it to happen because basic, decent people were complacent. And now it is irreversible. And a result of it, the resulting education is, it's so complacent that you just hope kids that graduate from high school can count. They may know a lot about a lot of different things, but can they do basic arithmetic operations? Again, a lot of it depends on the parents and whether, the work gets done. But we are way down the list when it comes to the educational standards. We're not number one by any stretch. I don't remember what it is, but we're way down there. We've lost our foundation. In ancient Israel, immorality ran rampant, and in the United States and in the nations that once formed the British Empire, the same is the case. The number of broken homes and fatherless households has continued to skyrocket, even as national prosperity has increased. Illegitimacy, the abortion of millions of innocent babies, and epidemics of sexually transmitted diseases are the hallmark of a sleazy, if it feels good, do it morality. Greed and materialism have become the nation's religion in countries that have long prided themselves on being Christian nations. I remember, as a small boy, going to church on Sunday, and the churches were full. Today we go to the mall. There are consequences for that. As a result of these and other sins, many now view the United States and Britain, once respected throughout the world, with ill-disguised contempt. Let's go over to Ezekiel chapter 20. Ezekiel chapter 20. Verse 11. Again, he's talking to Israel that no longer existed. And I gave them my statutes and showed them my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. I think sometimes we look at that and you say, okay, so I'm going to live by these judgments. No, what it's saying is, because you keep them, if you do them, you're going to live because of them. You live by them. Moreover, I also gave them my Sabbath to be a sign between them and me, that they might know that I am the Lord who sanctifies them. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness. They did not walk in my statutes. They despised my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. And they greatly defiled my Sabbath, that I said I would pour out my fury on them in the wilderness to consume them. But I acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned before the Gentiles, in whose sight I have brought them out. So I lifted my hand in an oath to them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of all lands, because they despised my judgments and did not walk in my statutes, but profaned my Sabbath, for their heart went after their idols. Nevertheless, my eyes spared them from destruction. I did not make an end of them in the wilderness, but I said to their children in the wilderness, do not walk in the statutes of your fathers, nor observe their judgments, nor defile yourselves with their idols. I am the Lord your God. Walk in my statutes, keep my judgments, and do them, hallow my Sabbath, and they will be a sign between me and you, that you may know that I am the Lord. But they rebelled again and again, and ultimately went into captivity. The same is true here. You know, for from the foundation of our country, Sabbath, albeit the wrong day, was observed one day in seven. And again, I'm saying clearly it was the wrong day. But there was still a tangible recognition that there was a God and that he had created one day in seven upon which we should refrain from work and rest. And while having the wrong day was inexcusable in the one sense, there was still a benefit over no day at all. We have arrived at the juncture where there's no day at all. And we're going to suffer the consequences. I mean, Israel, historically and contemporarily, has lived up to the reputation of being stiff-necked and rebelling against God despite the abundant blessings that he gave to them. And it's, like I said, it's not a very it's a sobering discussion. Let's switch gears now and focus in on the more positive message. We'll go over to Ezekiel chapter 37. Ezekiel chapter 37, verse 21. Then say to them, thus says the Lord God, surely I will take the children of Israel from among the nations wherever they have gone, and will gather them from every side and bring them into their own land. And I will make them one nation in the land on the mountains of Israel, and one king shall be over them all. They shall no longer be two nations, nor shall they ever be divided into two kingdoms again. So you see here that at the ingathering, so to speak, God is going to bring the remnant of the 12 tribes of Israel back to the mountains of Israel. And that means that literal descendants of Israel have to exist today in order for someone to be able to go back. Verse 23, they shall not defile themselves anymore with their idols, nor with their detestable things, nor with any of their transgressions, but I will deliver them from all their dwelling places in which they have sinned and will cleanse them. Then they shall be my people and I will be their God. For the first time, if you will. I mean, over the whole time, I mean, God was with ancient Israel, but here we see it taken to a new level. Verse 24. David, my servant, shall be king over them, and they shall all have one shepherd. They shall also walk in my judgments and observe my statutes and do them. They shall dwell in the land that I have given to Jacob, my servant, where your fathers dwell, and they shall dwell there, they, their children, and their children's children forever. My servant David will be their prince forever. Moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them, and it shall be an everlasting covenant with them. I will establish them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. And these are powerful promises of destiny. You know, if you look at the population of the United States at just over 300 million, a remnant is about 30. Nine out of 10 will no longer be here. And yet, God has been able to take from that remnant and build a kingdom that will stand forever. My tabernacle, verse 27, shall be with them, and indeed I will be their God, and they shall be my people. The nations also will know that I, the Lord, sanctify Israel when my sanctuary is in their midst forever. It all comes down to a matter of choice. We're talking primarily today at a national level, but nations are simply the expressions of individual choices. You know, we grumble about the political dilemma in Washington. In reality, and rather literally, it is simply an expression of where we are at as a nation, because after all, the nation sent them there. America is not back. I think most people know that, if they listen to their own hearts. Let's go over to Deuteronomy chapter 30. The question is, what will you and I do in our sphere of influence? Because that's really the only area in which we have control. You know, we were reading in Deuteronomy 28 about all the curses of disobedience. Chapter 29 is it talks about the covenant of Moab, and then chapter 30, verse 1, now it shall come to pass when all these things come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you, and you call them to mind among all the nations where the Lord your God drives you, and you return to the Lord your God and obey his voice, according to all that I command you today, you and your children, with all your heart, with all your soul, that the Lord your God will bring you back from captivity, and have compassion on you, and gather you again from all the nations where the Lord your God has scattered you. So, hope is never far away. If you've noticed in the Bible, in any situation in which God holds out justice and punishment, and in this case, cursing, he doesn't leave it at that. He holds out a path to redemption, destiny, and hope. Verse 11 through verse 20, and then we will conclude. As this brings it home, for this commandment which I command you today, it is not too mysterious for you, nor is it far off. It's not way out there. It is not irrational to not covet your neighbor's wife. It is not illogical or unreasonable to not steal. It is not unreasonable to expect children to honor their father and mother. And what's so tough about resting one day in seven? And what's bad about looking to God and loving your God with all your heart? It's not a way out concept. It makes sense if we are not too stiff-necked to look at it objectively. It is not in heaven that you should say, "Who will ascend into heaven for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it?" There's always, "I can't because," you know, there's always one more thing that is in between me and the ability to do what I know I should do. Nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, "Who will go over the sea for us and bring it to us that we may hear it and do it?" But the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may do it. See, I have set before you today life and good, death and evil. Decision time. In that I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments, his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land which you go to possess. But if your heart turns away so that you do not hear, and are drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, and oh, do we ever. I announce to you today that you shall surely perish. You shall not prolong your days in the land which you cross over to Jordan to possess. Verse 19, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, and that you may obey his voice, that you may cling to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. I would submit to you that we face that decision every day. And God says, choose life. The course before us is no doubt going to be difficult. The destination, and I mean the things that are set to happen are irreversible. It is only a question of when and how soon. And I can argue with myself, and I can present arguments to you, both of which will be rational and substantiated, that it could be all over in 5 years or it could go on another 50. But does it really matter for you and for me? Because God asks us to choose life every day. I hope that this series has been helpful. Choose life.